This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Hello and welcome to Season 6, Episode 10 of Commentary, Trek Stars, a show which deals with the work of Star Trek creators outside of Star Trek. I'm Mike.
I'm John.
And today is part two in our series on Maurice Hurley, looking at his work as a movie writer. And we're going to be looking at his first movie today, which is The Proposal. But before we do that, we figured we should follow up on some of the stuff that we were talking about last week. Because as these things happen, you know, we record our show with Larry, and on it, Larry tells us all this information, but at the same time, as he was quick to point out himself, like, no one knows anything about this dude because no one has had a chance to talk to him, like, aside from William Shatner with his documentary.
Yep.
Chaos on the Bridge. And he's like, I can't wait to see that. I hope it gets released someday. And then, like, we wake up the next morning and they say, Chaos on the Bridge is being released online tomorrow.
I think it's evidence that William Shatner listens to this show, Mike. I'm going to go on the record as saying that, Mr. Shatner, thank you for being an avid listener and making our wishes come true.
No, but see, I think it has to go beyond that because this happened after we recorded, but before we released it.
You think he's not listening right now? He's William Shatner.
You're right. You're right. He's probably listening.
Don't you remember what Fanboys?
Yes.
Remember? There's nothing he can't do.
You're right. You're right about that. You're right about that. That's one theory. I guess another theory is that Larry willed that movie's release into existence, which is fine, too.
I could see that happening. We did refer to him as the Q of Trek FM.
Yes,
so
that's true.
That would follow.
Yeah. So I actually did have a chance to watch it, and it's really good. I highly recommend it. You can get it online through Vimeo. You can either rent it or you can purchase it. I purchased it because I'm like, chances are I'm going to end up watching this thing again. I might as well just spend the extra $5, you know?
Okay, so compare it just to The Captains. Is it equal to, better than, like, more interesting or, like, similar but different sort of, you know?
It's similar to that. You know, he's a really good interviewer.
Yeah.
Like, he's a really good... Did you ever see... what was the name of his show?
Raw Nerve.
Yeah.
Fantastic show. Absolutely
so
enthralling. Yeah.
I mean, you know, Max and I have talked about this. I think we probably talked about it on a podcast somewhere where we're like, you know, there's the Tim Allen episode. And we're oh, man, this is going to be so great. They're going to talk about Galaxy Quest and everything. And then they get in there and they're like, so, you know, why are you the way you are? And he's like, oh, well, you know, my dad was an alcoholic, and I spent some time in prison, or whatever it was. I forget, you know. And it's like, what about the Galaxy Quest and the jokes and the, you know, or whatever that guy did. There you go.
Yeah.
And it's like, no, Shatner, he's just gonna jump right into it. And you know, with The Captains, I think with all this stuff, and it's really interesting with him when he's interviewing Star Trek people, especially not original series people, like, I really get the impression that he hasn't seen any of this stuff, you know?
Yeah, I'd say that's a fair read on things.
So, like,
I'd say that's true.
With The Captains, there's this thing of sort of like, you know, what's it like to be a captain, you know, philosophically, where are you at in your life, blah, blah, blah. And he's more interested in them as people. And he doesn't really care about their work necessarily, aside from the fact that it's a reflection of them as people.
Yeah.
But with this, he's actually telling like a narrative, which is kind of cool. You know, he's telling the story of the writer's room for season one of Next Gen. And that's pretty awesome. You know, and because it's a story which, you know, like we discovered last week, it really hasn't been told. And he does get all of the key players. He's got David Gerrold. He's got Susan Sackett, DC Fontana, Rick Berman. You know, everyone. Ira Stephen Bear shows up for a little while, and he's awesome as usual. Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, he's got everyone on there, and he's got Maurice Hurley. And Maurice Hurley, like, even though the documentary is very much a broad analysis of things that happened, and it gets every side of the story, it doesn't just settle on one point of view. It doesn't go into it. I think part of it, you know, which is probably good, is that he's probably not familiar with what happened, you know, in season one of Next Gen, aside from hearing stories here and there from his friends. And he doesn't have any, you know, he doesn't have any dog in the fight or whatever, you know. Right. So he's just like, whatever, I'm just going to get the story, you know. And there's some, like, really, like, even to the point of them contradicting, like, there's this whole thing where, like, the guy who was, like, the president of the studio, I forget what he was, but he was, like, the head executive. He talks about, like, this big blow-up that he had with Patrick Stewart. And he tells the story, and he makes Patrick Stewart basically, you know, sound like a jerk kind of thing. And he's like, and that's the last time I ever spoke to Patrick Stewart. And then they go to Patrick Stewart, and he's like, oh, really? Because I remember that completely differently. And he tells a completely different story that has nothing to do with the one that this other guy told.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, wow, that's, you know, that's interesting. But despite that, despite the fact that this has, you know, many viewpoints, and it definitely gives a thorough portrait from all perspectives, it really does seem like Maurice Hurley is the central figure here, you know? Mm-hmm. He's the one who is in it more than anyone else, and he doesn't pull any punches, and it's really interesting. And I think one of the most interesting things about it is his philosophy in terms of making the show and how that connects to Roddenberry's philosophy, mm-hmm. you know, and I can totally see why he'd be frustrated, because for whatever reason, he was thrust to the top of this show and mm-hmm. over David Gerrold and DC Fontana, which, you know, I think is probably why they left, because they were like, what the hell? We've been here since the beginning. We did the original series stuff. This guy has never done any sci-fi, and now all of a sudden he's our boss? Like, what is this? I don't understand, you know?
Yeah.
But the interesting thing about it is, like, Maurice Hurley knew what Roddenberry's vision was, and very similar to, say, Rick Berman, he took it upon himself to accurately portray Roddenberry's vision. He was trying to fit inside the Roddenberry box that we talk about again and again and again. And, you know, even though he didn't agree that that was necessarily the best thing to do. And what became really frustrating was when Roddenberry himself started operating outside of the box. And Hurley, who had been essentially fighting off all these people who were saying, like, we need to tell different stories, you know? And he's like, no, we got to do it the way that Roddenberry wants it to be done. Now Roddenberry's saying, like, we should do this. And Hurley was kind of like, I give up. You know, I can't fight you on doing what you're telling me to do. I set up a whole thing based on your thing, and now you're saying that that's gone? No. And, you know, I think that's a big reason as to why he left. So,
sure. Okay. So basically, he's sort of he viewed his role simply as being a conduit for Roddenberry, and then what Roddenberry was saying one day was suddenly changed, and it just sort of blew it out for him, because he was like, "Well, wait, I've been doing what you told me to do, and now you want something else."
Yeah, it sounds like season two is really rough, because Roddenberry started, you know, I mean, everyone talked about how Roddenberry was becoming more and more erratic in terms of, you know, what he was looking for and all this stuff. And it sounds like a lot of that had to do with his health problems at the time. But, you know, whatever the reason, you know, it became like sort of an impossible thing to work with. I mean, they talked about how, I think they said it was in like Ira Stephen Bear was telling this, like in Ron Moore's bathroom or something like that, which Ron Moore is in it too, and Brandon Braga, everyone, like in Ron Moore's bathroom or something, they had a board hanging up on the wall with a list of all of the writers that had been fired during season one and two. And Shatner's like, was it a long list? And Bear's like, it was a really long list for a show that had only been on for 2 years, you know?
Yeah.
Wow. So, yeah, it was a very, you know, crazy environment. And, you know, Shatner, he's a great interviewer, and he's also crazy, like, in the best possible way. And that makes for, like, a great, you know, they have, like, this cool, like, sort of, like, animated, sort of like in one of those like animated comic type styles going for it in order to sort of depict like events that people are describing.
Oh, that's awesome.
In sort that of like stylistic ways though.
Yeah.
You know, it's really cool. And then like the whole thing, and I remember like at one point Shatner was talking about how he wanted to call it like Wacky Doodle or something. And everyone's like, why would you call a documentary about Next Generation Wacky Doodle? And it's because Maurice Hurley said that, you know, the whole situation or something like that was Wacky Doodle, or Roddenberry's ideas were Wacky Doodle. And apparently Shatner just loved that term because he took it and ran with it. There's a song written for the show. Well, you know, which uses it, you know, again and again. It's like, okay, all right, whatever.
That's awesome. That's great. You're right. Shatner is crazy, but I think that craziness, like, I really want to see this now, and I'm going to make a point to see it. And it's specifically because as you're talking about it, Shatner is nuts, but he has that craziness that has that charisma that makes people want to talk to him.
Definitely, yeah.
I think that's why he's such a good interviewer. He triggers something in a person where it's almost like this gamesmanship where they want to match him and they want to get into his energy.
Yeah.
Cool.
I can see that, yeah. And unlike his other, you know, documentaries, which I do think are very good, like this one does have more of an energy to it than most. And it has, you know, more of a cohesive, like, story and everything. And it's definitely, I think, the best out of all the documentaries that I've seen. I haven't seen the convention one yet, but, you know.
Okay.
So, yeah. So, that's Chaos on the Bridge. Definitely check it out. Highly recommended. And it really is kind of like a expanded version of what we were talking about last week. Like, you know, they get into great detail about Gene's lawyer, who we touched on last week and everything. I kept on thinking, like, this is what we just had the conversation and now we're seeing and okay, cool. All right. Great. So yeah, check that out for sure. The only thing that one other point, which is relevant to Hurley, which I thought was really interesting, was he talked about how, Neutral Zone was set up as, you know, the introduction to the Borg, like we talked about last week, and how that was going to be the arc of season two. So it sounds like the original plan for season two was basically like the Borg are coming and then essentially have it end with something like the Best of Both Worlds.
Wow.
And can you imagine? I mean, that could have been the best season of Star Trek if that's
like mythology television ahead of the curve.
Yeah.
You know, like the whole single season narrative is, you know, it was an idea just being explored at that time. So that would have been, wow, for them to be in front of that ball would have been really cool.
And I
can imagine that would have definitely contributed to his frustration, too.
Oh, yeah.
Because if that was the plan, and then all of a sudden...
And, you know, a lot of it had to do with the strike. You know, they were talking about how, like, in between the seasons, you know, like, I think it was Patrick Stewart who was like, you know, told by someone at the network, like, or the studio, whatever, you know, it's not looking good. Like, you guys are gone. There is not going to be a season two. Like, everyone thought it was, and then the writing strike ended, and then they had to scramble. You know, at least that's the impression that I got from the documentary. So, I
look forward to running that.
Yeah, for sure. Check it out. It's well worth it. All right. So, also, in response to our discussion last week, we received a voicemail from Ben. So we're going to play that for you now because I think it is rather interesting.
I was just listening to your episode about Maury Hurley, and I'm one of the few people who managed to interview him. I've actually got some very interesting stuff from him about the Borg. He talks about the Borg being the devil, Q being God, and Picard being stuck in the middle, which I think is something that got completely forgotten. I don't think Michael Piller ever knew about it. He also talks about the fact that the Borg were America, that they were trying to assimilate everything and that you couldn't argue or reason with them. Maury was an interesting guy, very awkward about what happened on Next Gen, particularly in the second season. I tried to interview him about that and he said, no, there really is nothing I have to say about it. I managed to get him to talk about the Borg. I managed to get him to talk about the first season, but not the second season. Anyway, I hope that adds a little interesting stuff.
It does. Absolutely. That's thank you for the message. That's wonderful information to have. That's great.
For sure. Yeah. It's really interesting. You know, I had never really thought about that. I mean, I can totally see what he's saying about the Borg being America, you know, and the sort of like, you know, imperialistic nature and you know, assimilating other colonies, but basically turning them all into America, you know.
Yeah, the sort of the homogeneous view of the world. We bring great technology and power, but you will sacrifice your identity to be one of us.
Exactly. Yeah. I can definitely see that. You know, it's kind of similar to, I mean, that type of thing. You know, you see that all the time. You know, even, you know, just in relation to like inside America in terms of like consumerism and stuff like that, you know.
Sure.
So they live, right?
Sure. Yeah, so. Nice. Yes, you're right.
So that's kind of cool. I mean, the idea of Q as God and the Borg as the devil and Picard caught in between, that's an interesting concept. I don't know how well it tracks for me, but then again, that might have been something that they were planning on, you know, expanding on in the future.
Yeah, I mean, you could easily say like maybe Q was a mischievous, I mean, in a sense, well, you know, you could go nuts. I mean, that they said, you know, God and the devil and Picard caught in between, but I mean, I think you could almost make an argument that Q would have been even better stated in that sort of analogy as a like a mischievous angel or an imp, or you know, somebody who's not evil, but he's not necessarily good. Like he's doing that. I mean, in a sense, Q almost becomes the devil.
Yeah.
In that, because he's the tester. He's not trying to take you out. But he's doing all of this to test you, to see if you're worthwhile. And then he has his demons come and attack you or whatever. But
yeah, which maybe kind of. I mean, because that's another thing that they talk about in the documentary. They talk to Brandon Braga, and you know, like Shatner brings this up. He's like, okay, Q is basically God, right? And they talk about how Q was added to Encounter at Farpoint by Roddenberry, right, in an effort to expand it into 2 hours. Basically, the original, you know, script for Encounter at Farpoint was what's on screen, but without any Q, you know?
Wow.
So that thing was kind of grafted on there, and Shatner's like, okay, that's really weird because, you know, Gene Roddenberry is known for being a hardcore atheist. You know, many people, I mean, Brandon Braga gave like a speech on this where, you know, that he talked about how, you know, Star Trek is really the great atheist mythology of our time and everything like that. And here he is in the very first episode of his new Star Trek show. He sticks God into it. He's like, what's up with that? And Braga's like, yeah, that's weird. I never thought about that. You know, but, yeah. You know, I guess I never really saw him as God. While he does have godlike powers, like you're saying, he is sort of more of a trickster god, you know?
Right.
So perhaps that's what Roddenberry was doing. Maybe he was commenting on that. I don't know. It's interesting. It's interesting. But adding this thing, what Hurley is saying about the god, about Q being God and the Borg being the devil, that's strange. It's interesting.
Yeah, I'd like to find out. I'd actually really like to find out more about that.
Yeah, me too.
I really would.
Me too. So thank you, Ben. Thank you very much. You know, we really do appreciate it. That was definitely very insightful. So it's like, man, if we would have just waited 1 week to record this thing, all of our questions would have been answered. But no, that's the way it works. So let's move on to the proposal, which we also know nothing about, and maybe next week we'll get all the information we ever wanted on the proposal.
I'm not sure I want as much information on the proposal, Mike. I'm really not sure about that.
Perhaps not. We shall see. I don't know. So this was the first movie that Hurley wrote. Now, you know, Hurley was primarily a television writer. You know, he had written for Miami Vice. He had written for The Equalizer, all that stuff. And in 2001, this was released, which was a movie which went straight to video. It was directed by Richard Gale, who hasn't directed much in terms of movies, but I guess he's pretty big right now in terms of like sort of independent short films. It looks like they're kind of like comedy horror type of shorts. And prior to that, he was a multi-Emmy winner for, I think, like local news videography, that sort of stuff. So this was a movie that he directed, written by Maurice Hurley. And it stars Nick Moran, Jennifer Esposito, Stephen Lang of Avatar fame. William B. Davis.
And also Tombstone. Don't forget he was in Tombstone.
All right. Haven't seen Tombstone. Sorry.
Oh man. Once a week we got to go through the... All right, go on.
I keep on telling... Every time people are shocked by movies that I haven't seen, I'm like, there's a lot of movies that I haven't seen. I didn't start watching movies until I was like 15 years old, you know?
Yeah.
You got a lot of catching up to do.
You got to see... Like, you've got to... At this point, you've got to see Tombstone just because Stephen Lang is so good an actor that when you see him in I was about 3/4 of the way through Avatar before I realized, oh my gosh, he was in Tombstone. Like it took that long, but I made us digress. My apologies.
That's okay. I mean, this digression actually spawned an idea for me for my other show Off Topic, where I'm going to do an episode where we pick our top 10 movies that we haven't seen that we need to see.
Oh, I think that's a great idea.
Yeah.
That is a fantastic idea.
So that could be interesting.
Okay.
But spoilers, neither Tombstone nor Braveheart are on my list. Sorry. It is what it is. It's my list. What can I say?
We're different people, Mike. That's all I can say.
Okay, so he's in it. Also, William B. Davis, Cancer Man from The X-Files, is in it.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
so
that was weird seeing him.
Yeah, and it was great. I like every time I see him, I'm like, hey, I love that guy. He reminds me a lot of my dad. Like, my dad does not smoke. He does work for the government, but as far as I know, he's not like a secret agent or anything like that.
There was that time that the neighbor down the street disappeared after saying something nasty about the lawn, but you're pretty sure that's not related.
I don't think so. but he has the same mannerisms and everything. He looks very similar. It's very strange. So every time I see that guy, I think of my dad. Cool. And then it's also got that guy who, I don't know his name, but he was in a couple episodes of The X-Files as like a hypnotist. Like, he's in Jose Chung's From Outer Space. And I think, I forget what the other one, I think it's another one of the Darren Morgan episodes.
See, I don't know specifically which actor you're talking about, because just about every actor in this movie is somebody you've seen on television at some point. I mean, it really is, it looks and sort of feels like it was cast for television.
Yeah. I mean, they definitely had a lot of TV people, and we can get into the look and the feel of the movie in a minute, but before we do, how about we give a synopsis of the movie? You want to give a synopsis of this thing?
Yes. An undercover cop gets assigned a fake wife, quote unquote, to help bring down this mob boss that he has been undercover for 6 months, which, judging by how stressed this guy is all the time, is a really long time to be undercover.
Yeah.
And they are supposed to play man and wife and get into the good graces of this mob boss and get him to either do or say something that's going to cause him to be thrown in jail.
Yes. And there are twists and turns along the way. I guess.
I'd say there are turns, not many twists.
Okay, fair enough. So what are your thoughts on the proposal?
Well, I feel like maybe I've given away with my demeanor what I thought of this movie, but I was actually thinking about it while I was watching that every so often, you know, you'll be up a little later than usual and you're scanning the channels and sometimes you get up to the HBO and Cinemax territory. This has all of the visual and scripted charm of one of those movies that you happen across without any of the prurient nature that ensures these things a place on late-night television. I imagine that this movie probably has played on cable and probably those cable channels from time to time and frustrated some young lad that was looking for something else. But this movie is basically an exercise in frustration in the sense that the motivations make no sense. The script is pretty rough, and it wants to be much more than it is. And it would have, I just don't see anything in this movie working in any real fashion. Nobody goes out to make a bad movie. You know, everybody's showing up on set and they're trying to make the best thing that they can, but sometimes it just doesn't work. Now, I will say that Stephen Lang, again, he's great in anything. He's like my personal Gene Hackman. And so he's fun to watch. Like, you can tell that he's really into the part. But the movie as a whole is really just sort of a train wreck.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, here's a good test. Sorry, it's kind of a digression, but just a good test to see where you're at on the Stephen Lang scale. Apparently, the original plan for Avatar was to have that role, the Stephen Lang role, be played by Michael Biehn.
Oh, that. See, I think Stephen Lang did a better job with it.
Okay.
Than he would have. I have a soft spot for Michael Biehn as anybody who grew up watching Terminator.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
We all, and Aliens, we all have a soft spot for him. But I do think that Stephen Lang was one of the few things of Avatar that I truly enjoyed watching. So.
Interesting. Yeah. Okay. All right. I'm definitely in the Michael Biehn camp on that one, but that's true of pretty much everything. So, yeah.
Fair enough.
Okay. Yeah. I mean, for me, this movie, it's like that aesthetic that you're talking about, where it looks and it feels like a late night cable movie, right?
Yeah.
I really have like a soft spot in my heart for those types of things because it like when I was watching them, when this movie came out or whatever, it was when I was at film school, and that sort of low budget thing was something that I could relate to because that was at about the level of movie making that I was at, you know?
Okay.
So, like, that's how, like, my movies looked and that kind of thing. So there's that. But there's also the sort of thing of, like, again, from that time period, like, when you're in film school and whatever and you're watching and you're trying out everything and you're seeing what you like and what you don't like in terms of movies, and there'd always be those movies, like, probably this one sitting on the shelf at Blockbuster, like the new release wall at Blockbuster. I miss it so much because it was always so great because there'd be like a full wall of Avatar, a full wall of like the X-Files movie or whatever.
Yep.
And then there'd be like just one copy of stuff like The Proposal or whatever. Usually they starred Dean Cain. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but
Casper Van Dien took his place for a little bit.
Yeah, Casper Van Dien for sure. But, you know, I would always look at those. Like, those would be the ones, because I'm like, if there's a movie which I had never heard of, because, you know, I went to see everything. If there is a movie that I had never heard of and it had, like, a star in it that I had heard of, like, I would always pick it up. I'd always flip it over and see who, like, the director was. Because yeah. half the time it would be Russell Mulcahy, and that guy's amazing. You know, I've watched so many. So there's this thing where it's like, I would give those movies a shot because I hadn't seen them, and I'm like, you never know. Like, this movie might be great, and most of the time they weren't. But occasionally you'd find one where it actually was great, and you'd go back and you'd be like, you guys should, you know, take a look at this because no one's ever heard of it, but it's excellent, you know, and it's just sort of like one of those things that, you know, I mean, like there was like a guy, Gregory Dark, I think his name was, who did like a bunch of music videos, and his sort of side gig or whatever was making movies like this. And his whole thing was like, you don't have any money, but nobody cares what you're doing since they're not giving you any money. So really, as long as you check all the boxes, as long as you have X amount of violence and X amount of sex or whatever, you can literally do whatever you want in these movies and no one will tell you no. And he made a ton of them, you know, and he's like, this is better than making movies for the big screen because then I'd have a studio behind me just telling me what I can and can't do. This is actually my movie, good or bad. And, you know, there is something about that. So when I saw this, when I saw the picture on, you know, Netflix, and I'm like, ooh, this looks like it might be something cool. You know, it took me back to that time period, especially when I saw, like, Cancer Man was in it and stuff. I'm like, ooh. That being said, it does not work. This is not one of those hidden gems. This is new. Problematic. I mean, the script is not good. But I think the direction is worse, if that makes sense.
It's a close call. I think it's a worthwhile discussion, I would say that this director definitely seems not to have the full arsenal of experience that, you know, a seasoned director might have. But I would also say that, boy, the script really feels like he was starting from nothing.
Well, I mean, that could be in terms of the direction first, I guess. You know, I do feel like it is a guy who's trying to figure out how to make a movie, which, you know, I've been there. And, you know, I haven't made a movie which is half as good as The Proposal. So who am I to talk? But but, you know, I think that part of it is a lack of budget. You know, maybe some over ambition, you know, not realizing your limits, you know, and trying to extend, you know, a dollar maybe a little bit further than you can, and the end result is kind of weak. That being said, I also think that maybe his actors were not as solid as they could have been in most cases. I mean, surely Stephen Lang is great, and, you know,
William Davis playing, you know, he's apparently born to play an FBI agent.
Yeah, yeah. You know. And the guy who plays the hypnotist on the X-Files, he's amazing too. Mainly because he has the most amazing look I've ever seen on a person. So there's that. But, you know, I did keep on thinking, well, I don't think that the script is good. I did keep on thinking, like I was almost playing it in my mind as if it were done with a higher budget, as if it were made like a movie like this should be made, you know? And when I look at it that way, when I sort of like read the script that I'm seeing in my head, the movie that plays in my mind is a lot better than the one that we're seeing on screen.
You know who else did that? Homer Simpson. When they showed the brainwashing film for the leader in that particular episode. And at the end, he talked about, did they know that the cop was in internal affairs the whole time? And they said, well, that wasn't in the movie. Where'd you get that from? He goes, yeah, but I got really bored, so I made another movie in my head while I was watching it.
That's interesting. Yeah. I've never seen that episode. I don't
know. Yeah. Oh, oh, it's, Yeah, the leader with Listonia. It was actually a very surreptitious Scientology jab, which is very interesting considering Nancy Cartwright is a Scientologist. So, but she didn't quite catch it. Anyway, I disliked this movie enough that it was more a sense of I was dreading any moment where they were going to try to have some sort of sexual charisma between the two main characters.
Yeah.
Like, I was watching it with fear. I was like, oh, no, don't go down that road. Stop. Let's just get this over with. We know where we're going. Let's just keep moving.
Yeah. It is kind of interesting, though. I mean, like, you know, kind of thinking about it as a script and not necessarily just a movie. Like, Hurley has done a lot of cop shows and stuff like that, right? So you'd figure, like, this type of story is his wheelhouse. I don't know. I mean, there are some twists and turns here, but they don't, like you're saying, they don't really twist that much. It's kind of like a...
Yeah, there's pretty much a roadmap. All the way until an absolutely ludicrous ending that doesn't even give you any sort of dramatic payoff.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, I'm not expecting any by the time I get to the end. I'm just expecting it to be over. But it suddenly, it even then pulls the rug out from under you in the sense that it says, well, you know what? We could go one of two ways right here. And what the hell? Let's just have a happy ending. Okay.
I mean, the big problem with the script, I think, is that the main character is completely unlikable.
That would be a problem, yes. Very true. Very true.
I don't know. I mean, it is kind of interesting to see, like, you know, a cop movie from a guy who's done a bunch of cop shows and stuff like that, but this is not his best work by any stretch of the imagination.
Nope.
I don't know. Anything else you want to add about this movie? Or
In this case, I added my review on Letterboxd.
Oh,
under
yeah.
The username Kessel Junkie. It's the first review I've entered on Letterboxd. Thank you, Mike, for steering me toward that service. I will have fun with it. Oh. But my inaugural review is trashing this movie. And it appears that I actually gave it fewer stars than you did.
Yeah,
I gave it half a star.
You gave it half a star? Oh, yes, I thought you gave it one star.
Half or one is kind of the same. That's basically that's like on a pass-fail scale. You didn't die actually in the classroom.
Okay.
So there you go.
See, I don't give half stars in my ratings. I always do full stars. So just because I'm like, how much do we need to break this down into little itty bitty bits? You know, I have enough trouble separating, you know, once it's either good or bad, but. On a 5-star scale, I gave it 2 stars, which I almost always, like, basically, if I don't like a movie, but it has some redeeming quality, right? Like, there's something in it which makes me go, hey, that's cool. I'll give it 2 stars.
And that was?
Like I was saying, I liked the style, you know?
Okay.
And I liked Cancer Man, and I liked the hypnotist guy.
Cancer Man just reminded me how much I wanted to watch X-Files again.
Yeah. Me too, actually. But, you know, I had to give it that. So 2 stars. I think 2 stars was reasonable.
I think that this is one of those cases where you are the kinder person than I am.
Okay. All right.
So.
Fair enough. At least it got you to Letterboxd. So that's
true.
Matters. You know,
it all works out.
Great. I mean, yeah. I keep track of all the movies that I watch on there. I give little star ratings for each, and then they got the whole list section.
Yeah, I'm going to have a lot of fun with the lists.
Oh, it's great.
That's going to be pretty cool.
Yeah. So go join Letterboxd. And I think the thing about Letterboxd is it's like the anti-proposal in that stylistically, it's gorgeous. It has the most beautiful... layout and everything, it just pops. It's just like, yes,
the interface is great.
It's so colorful, you know, because it's got the great, you know, movie posters and everything for each of the movies, and
yeah.
It's very slick. It's nice. Go join Letterboxd. It's great. So that's it for the proposal, I guess. Unless you have any final thoughts.
Nope.
All right. I don't really have any final thoughts either. I would just say that, it's interesting in that it is a cop show or cop movie, and we haven't, you know, since this guy is, you know, Maurice Hurley, he's not known for sci-fi by any stretch of the imagination. This is a little taste of, you know, what he did on a regular basis. So that's cool.
Yeah. Just don't judge him on this one alone.
No. All right. Well, before we go, there's a little bit of information about the new Star Trek movie, Star Trek Beyond.
Yes.
It's finally been confirmed officially, that Idris Elba is actually in this movie.
Yeah, and we still don't know who he's playing or if it's an alien race, but it's exciting to have him in it because, so far as I'm concerned, Idris Elba is one of the best actors out there working right now, and I look forward to having him join the Star Trek franchise.
Yeah, he's really good. He's really good. Did you watch The Wire?
Oh, yeah. Are you kidding?
Yeah.
The Wire. The Wire is, that's, man, it's tough because that's one of those ones that is always, for the rest of time, going to drive people who haven't seen it nuts. Because every time somebody says, I haven't seen The Wire, it's going to be like me reacting to you not seeing Tombstone, where it's like, what? How can you? It's like Jules in Pulp Fiction. It's like, but you are aware of an invention called television, and on this thing they show shows, right? Well, The Wire is one of the best ones of those shows.
My friend Marcelo, who does the Talk Film Society.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
He had an idea, which he threw out there at one point, where I was like, you gotta do that. Where he's never seen The Wire, and he wanted to do a podcast where he does, like, reviews. He watches the entire series and does reviews of each episode. I think he was going to do it with someone who had seen the show before, and he was going to call it, Why Are You Not Watching This?
Nice. I think that's a great idea.
I'm like, you have that. To. I would totally do that with you if I had the time.
Yeah.
But he hasn't done it, so maybe one day.
That's awesome.
Anyway, so yeah, well, it's great that Idris Elba is going to be in this thing. I think people have said that he's not playing a pre-existing character. I mean, it really does seem like they're going in another direction with this. Whether or not he's an alien, who knows? But, you know, he can play anything he wants. You know, I'll believe it.
If I had my druthers, I prefer him to play a human simply because I don't want prosthetics or any tricks or anything like that. The guy is such a raw acting talent that I just want him. I don't want anything to detract from his performance. And, of course, if he winds up being an alien, it's not like I'm going to be like, oh, this is terrible and ruined now. But, you know, just make him – don't make him a Superman and don't make him a Romulan. Just make him awesome. Let him just be awesome.
Someone said basically that same exact thing on the Babel conference, and my response was like, he's a good enough actor that – you know, he doesn't need the prosthetic. You can just be like, oh yeah, he's a Klingon. Yeah, he's a Tellarite. Yeah, don't you, yeah. I mean, he'll convince you that he's wearing a forehead, you know, even if he's not, you know. But they could also do, I mean, like the character, when I first heard about it, I'm like, General Chang, come on, you got to do Chang, you know, but they're not doing Chang because Chang's going to be in this Green Lantern comic and everything. But whatever, that seemed to be the logical step for this movie for me. But, and you know, I mean, that's a case where Christopher Plummer was like, I don't want the freaking forehead. Just give me a few bumps and let's call it a day, you know?
Yeah.
They could have done that. But it's not going to be General Chang, so it's a moot point.
I'm fine with that. I'm looking forward to the fact that it's going to be something and someone new and different and not rebooting somebody we've already seen.
Fair enough.
Give me something new.
Fair enough. Yeah. Also, just because Drew from Standard Orbit pointed this out to me, and I couldn't not jump at the hype. Roddenberry.com is now selling T-shirts with the logo that's on that patch, which Justin Lin tweeted a week ago.
No way. Yeah. Really?
Yeah. I mean, you can really tell that they were like, oh, wait, we, you know, Drew's like, do they have the rights to that? I'm like, yeah, they gotta, you know? So they must have been like, we have the rights to this. Let's cash in really quick. You know, kind of like when Miramax, whoever owned the rights to Miramax movies in Canada started releasing like all the Miramax movies on Blu-ray before Miramax themselves did.
No, I didn't know that happened.
I mean, that's, it was awesome. Great, because all of a sudden it's like, there's From Dusk Till Dawn. Oh my God. And it actually looks a lot better than what's on the American Blu-ray. But there were a few, like, they're like, we have Seven. And they're like, well, that's not even letterboxed. It's not even. And they're like, who cares? It's Seven. Just get it out there. You know, okay. So it was like one of those things. But whatever. Didn't stop me from buying the shirt. So, you know, check it out. If you want the first piece of Star Trek Beyond merchandise. Roddenberry.com. There you go.
Awesome.
And also, they've said that they're going to be shooting this movie in Dubai, and that it might be, which I think we had heard that info before.
Yeah.
But in addition to that, they've said that it might be a vertical alien city.
Oh, wow. Okay, they're going to use that hotel that they use in Mission Impossible 4.
Yeah.
Yeah, the Burj Dubai, is that how you say it?
I think so, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's your vertical city.
Excellent.
Just use CG and make it bigger or something.
But it sounds like that's what they're going to do last on this shoot. Like, they're going to do that in, like, August, which makes sense. You know, shoot in Vancouver, get everything done, and then
Go to the desert at the hottest part of the year. Yeah. It is smart. You're right. Yeah. Right on the equator, too. You don't want to miss out on any of that good sunlight.
At least they won't have to worry about, you know, they would have to worry about short shooting days, right?
They're going to have to worry about their cameras exploding in the heat. So okay. Hopefully they will manage that just fine.
They're professionals. I'm sure they've got it all.
Yeah.
All right. Well, it was fun talking about The Proposal today, but that's not all we're talking about here on Trek FM this week. So here's a look at what you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
These look at least like they're pretending that they're sealed.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they're just like beekeeper. They're still beekeeper helmets, but
They really
the
do.
Mesh looks more solid.
They really do kind of look like electric razors.
Earl Grey.
We divide the ship into one of two ways. Port goes to port. I better not see any starboard guys on the starboard phaser target practice. You guys know which side of the ship you're on.
The Orb.
And so they cannot impart to him the knowledge that he needs in order to raise his son. And Worf doesn't want to raise a human son. Like you said earlier, he didn't get the son that he wanted. He wants to raise a Klingon son.
The Ready Room.
We knew that Spock was popular, and we knew that Dad had some fans, but we were not prepared for what we saw happening in the social media, in the print media. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think the New York Times reported that they got more hits on Dad's obituary than any other personality in the history of the paper.
To the journey! I can just hear the Earl Grey people screaming, measure of a man, measure of a man.
And you know what I would say to that? Death wish, death wish.
Warp 5.
I remember watching Broken Bow when Enterprise first debuted when I was in high school. And I remember revisiting it now in full. And I had forgotten the fact that Future Guy had actually played an integral role from the get-go with Silic and the Suliban, which we'll talk about later in the show.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
It's all of these top-notch filmmakers, like people like Walter Murch, who literally wrote the book on editing. He, like, those guys all teaming up to make a big action kids movie, I think is really cool.
The 602 Club.
I think he's very much recreating that THX feel, and you may disagree with it. You may not think it's, you know, it's great, but it's on purpose. He wants that world to be that way.
Let me just say, conceptually, I agree with that. In terms of execution, that's where I think he failed.
Literary Treks.
It's amazing to me, as I reread these stories, how much of it I just kind of think of as Deep Space Nine these days, even though it wasn't part of Deep Space Nine, you know, the actual series.
Axanar, the official podcast.
It is the spirit of TOS that matters that's being captured, but it doesn't necessarily have to be the aesthetic. The aesthetic was 1966 to 1969 that had its moment, it had its time, and there's a certain amount of charm still to that. But it doesn't allow you to push the narrative forward because that type of aesthetic holds creativity back, in my opinion.
Women at Warp.
She got that far without losing tons of crew members, which you know Kirk would have.
She's the Ernest Shackleton of deep space.
Of course she's an admiral.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. And beyond. Star Trek Beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the shows as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well. Another way that you can help us keep all of our shows coming to you each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm. If you want to contact us, you can use the form on trek.fm/contact, or you can leave us a voicemail like Ben did. Just look on the sidebar of the show page or go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. And I have to say, I think with that voicemail, we are now like leaps and bounds ahead of all of the other podcasts in terms of receiving voicemails with three. I think everyone else has like one, right?
So, we, yeah. Yes. Yeah. Keep them coming, folks.
Yeah.
Help us maintain our lead.
Yeah. You can also find us on Twitter at TrekFM, or you can find us on Facebook at facebook.com/TrekFM. You can also find the Babel Conference on Facebook. Just type the Babel Conference, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook or go to our website at trek.fm and click the discussion tab on the menu bar. John, where can people find you on the internet?
You can find me crawling around on Twitter at Kessel Junkie. And you can also find me appearing on a weekly podcast called Words with Nerds with my buddy Craig that drops on Thursdays through iTunes and blah, blah, blah.
And you can find me on Twitter at Mumbles3K, or you can find me here on Trek FM doing Standard Orbit with Drew, or CommentaryTrackStars.com doing Commentary Track Stars Off Topic and Commentary Track Star Babies. And you can find us all on Twitter at ComTrackStars, or you can email us all at ComTrackStars@gmail.com. Before we go, we'd like to ask everyone to please support our sponsor who helps us bring Commentary, Trek Stars, and all of our shows to you each week. And our sponsor for this show is Audible.com. Audible is a great way for you to read all of the books you've always wanted to read but never thought you'd have the time for. What book do you have for us today, John?
Well, the book that we have today is Star Trek Borg, written by Hilary Bader, narrated by Howard McGillen and John DeLancey, and directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Oh,
yeah, which, you know, that's a heck of a Star Trek pedigree right there.
Yeah, I'll listen to that.
Cadet Kalen Furlong's father was killed by the Borg in the Battle of Wolf 359. Now, 10 years later, the Borg are attacking again, and Starfleet won't allow Cadet Furlong to stay aboard the starship Cheyenne to avenge his father's death. But Q will. He'll do better than that, in fact, taking the cadet back in time and putting him on the same ship as his father to give Kalen a chance to save him and the entire Federation on a mission of extreme danger, difficult choices, and surprising results.
So, was this based on a video game or something?
I don't know. It's, no, it just says by Hilary Bader. It's a fully dramatized adventure.
Directed by Jonathan Frakes.
directed by Jonathan Frakes.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. I'm going to have to listen to that. You know, Hilary Bader was a writer for Batman, the animated series.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Well, that's, wow. That's,
and just about Superman everybody's awesome. And all that stuff, you know. Ah, I didn't even know that that existed. We'll have to do that. We could even cover that on this show.
It's like I would be happy to.
Jonathan Frakes, you know, directed thingy.
Yeah.
We'll have to look into that. Well, you can get it for free since you listen to Trek FM. As a Trek FM listener, you can get a free audiobook of your choice along with a 30-day trial to see just how great Audible is. Just go to audibletrial.com/trekfm and sign up today. Again, that's audibletrial.com/trekfm, and we thank Audible for supporting Commentary, Trek Stars, and the network. All right, so Maurice Hurley, he's in the news. He's relevant. We planned this. We were like, let's do Maurice Hurley right now.
Yeah.
You know, because there's going to be so much heat under Maurice Hurley. And, you know, next week, we're going to do another Maurice Hurley movie, which is sure to have a lot of heat under it as well. And that's Groom Lake, which was directed by the one and only William Shatner. So, yeah. Unfortunately, this movie is not on Netflix, but if you want to watch it, you can buy it off of Amazon. I'm not saying that you should or shouldn't. I'm just saying
we don't want to give anything away, Mike.
Yeah.
We don't want to give anything away.
Spoilers. But if you look at my Letterboxd account, you might see what I think about this movie. And after describing how I give almost every movie I don't like 2 stars, you might be interested to see how many stars I gave Groom Lake. Spoilers. It's not 5 stars. But we'll talk about that next week.
Indeed.